This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk. And boy, do we have a special guest today. I'm sure you know this name, Sally Kellerman. Yes, the actress. And her new book is called Read My Lips. It's out from Weinstein Books. Hello, how are you?
Hi, great.
You have such a great voice.
Oh, thank you.
It's so calming and pleasant to listen to.
Oh, thanks. I'm so calm. I was going to get up and walk and really hit the trail running this morning. Instead, I was reading a script, which nothing makes you sleepier than reading a script, you know?
I can imagine. I'm sure you've read enough of them in your lifetime.
Yeah, but I should have walked first. Anyway, it's so nice to hear from you, and thank you.
Thank you for being on the show. I've been looking forward to it.
Good.
Now, you're probably most well known for MASH, the movie MASH. Does that bother you sometimes?
Sometimes, you know, because I made about 48 movies, and you know, but I love it. Hell, it was one of the great experiences of my career and my life, really, you know, meeting Bob Altman and Robert Altman.
He sounds like quite a character. I mean, I know he's passed.
He was a character.
Yeah. I mean, I guess.
I just
reading about him, it makes me think, wow, what a character he was.
he was really something. But he was just so incredible. I mean, you know, he was so many things, you know. I mean, but working with him on a set was like, you know, as I said, when we did MASH, it was like going on a picnic with a genius in the wings, you know, just tossing out an idea now and then that just gave you the whole key of the character without any effort and without any...
One of those directors everybody seemed to want to work with at some point or another.
Yeah, I know it's true. There was something about him like, you know, when you know somebody loves you and they really get you and how free you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like, that's what I think Bob... I always thought I was just a special one, but I'm sure I was. But
you definitely were something different. There's no doubt you made your mark.
Oh well, I'm just joking around. But we were really close all his life and all mine.
What I really admire about you is the fact that you always put your family first. I mean, whatever happened, it was family first.
Well, you know, like most people. It is such a special thing to have a family, you know, and to have children. And with all the ups and downs and the ins and outs, you know,
yeah.
Nothing like it, really.
I think people think, wow, you know, you become famous, you're an actress, you make all kinds of money, and you never have to worry about anything. But it isn't that simple.
No, it really isn't. It's just like everybody else, you know. It's the good times and the good days and the off days. And the...
Were you ever offered TV shows? I'm wondering if you... I know you were on different... you were on The Outer Limits and other things. But were you ever offered a TV series?
A couple of times. Every time I play a nurse, I just rock it right to stardom. I did a 12 o'clock high, and they offered me a role as a nurse. And I turned it down because I was just so, you know... big. I was guest starring in all the shows in the 60s. I must have guest starred in every show they ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what else I was offered. I did a pilot once playing, Sidney Pollack directed just a day of it. You know, I was so thrilled with Darren McGavin, and we were going to be From Here to Eternity. We were going to be Deborah Carr and Burt Lancaster, but it didn't sell, and this is way back in the early 60s, and it is The Outer Limits that started my career.
Right.
I did two of them, Joe Stefano discovered me in the...
I love that show. I've always loved that show.
I did too. It was a great show.
I mean, with the budget they had, they could really scare you. I mean, they're scary even today. when you watch them.
Were they? I don't remember, but I had the first time I played a nurse. I played a nurse with Barry Merrill and Harry Gardino, and by changing brains or something with a machine. And then the next one I did, Joe Stefano wrote for me, and you know, he was real old-fashioned Hollywood, and you know, I had a zippered-up house coat with a fur collar, and married to Martin Landau, and then I killed the cutest outer space monster you've ever seen. Oh, I mean, he was so darling, he'd be a friend of mine even today, but I killed him.
Now, that's the picture that's in your book? That's one of the pictures of the monster?
Oh, the monster, no, that was from the first one.
Yeah. That was from the first
one. No, that was a big burly monster. No, this was just a delicate little white kind of little figure. Kind of, I thought of him as a man, a little man, you know, flying into the space. And then I got trapped in this shield for the rest of my life, screaming. And Tito Rivera played my, you know, from Broadway, that fabulous.
Oh, actress, yeah, absolutely.
Actress, played my barefooted housekeeper. Very mysterious. And anyway, I ended up, and I said, you know, gee, I don't know how to scream when I was trapped in this invisible shield, which wasn't really there, you know. And she goes, oh, you don't know how to scream? Come with me. She stepped behind the flat and went, ah, you know, the top of her lungs. And I went, oh, I get it.
Now I understand how to do it.
Now I understand screaming. Yeah, I got it. So anyway, I'm trying to think if I was offered other series. I don't know. I can't remember at this moment, but hey, maybe as we keep jogging my memory here. I've gotten a slow start, for sure.
What's interesting is I've been reading your book, and all of a sudden you run into somebody really famous, like Harrison Ford was your carpenter at one time. I mean, it's amazing. It's like Harrison Ford was your carpenter?
Yeah, well, he was a lot of people's carpenters, but it was the early 70s. I was still relatively young, and I wanted a built-in couch, enough room for two. Mm-hmm. And when he used to just come in the morning, you know, so handsome. It was my boyfriend who introduced me to him. So, and he was married. We had two kids and an old truck. And when he showed up, I thought, oh my, yeah, this is my carpenter. Okay, I didn't know who he was or anything like that, really.
Mm-hmm.
But so when he built the couch for me, I go, oh, Harrison. No, that's not the way I want it. I want it big enough for two. And he goes, that's the way it has to be. It'll be like only a single, you know, little narrow thing. That's
I can hear him saying that, too.
Yeah. But he was so handsome, you know, and so sure of himself. And I go, okay, fine, you know. And then the next time he built this bookshelf, we kind of start ended and then stuck out way, you know. I said, Harrison, why couldn't that start right at the edge of the door and yet stick out so far? He says, that's the way it's got to be.
That seems
okay, you know, but anyway, it was really fun. And then the next, after he had, just all he had to do was like two little wires left to put on the ceiling, and he came in one day and said, well, it was probably their first choice, the last choice, but I got this movie, you know, with Alec Guinness in a spaceship, and I envisioned this little white boat with pegs across the top, and Alec Guinness standing in a white, you know, gown with a staff, and because I was already starring in movies, and so I just was like, oh, how nice for you, Harrison, that's wonderful, you know, I love Alec Guinness, you know, bless your heart.
Well, did you know how huge the movie was going to be?
Turned out it was Star Wars, and the next time I saw him, Mercedes pulled up outside in the front of the house, and I was talking to a friend, I said, oh, there's a big Mercedes out front, I think I'll go out and see who it is. And it was Harrison. He said, I hate to be Hollywood, but can I use the phone, you know? I said, Harrison, I don't have a handyman anymore. And he said, yeah, neither do I, but I know where you can get some tools cheap. And that was about the last time I saw him.
How wonderful.
I've only seen him a couple of times in my life since then. But
that's wonderful.
That was fun.
But you lived next door to the people to Bread, the group. I love their music. I mean, it's like, wow, what lucky her, you know? It's like,
oh, Bread.
Yeah.
Well, that was a really different time, you know. And I talk about it in the book about the Manson killings and this house where we'd all hung out.
And what a horrifying time that must have been.
It was really something, yeah. And I'd done all my rehearsals for my first tour, you know, musically. I was always a singer, and so I, in the middle of my film career, the beginning, just after I got nominated for Academy Award, I got a band and went on the road. You know, not a great career planner, but...
Yeah, you really like to sing.
I need to sing, yeah. I am a singer, and so I, you know, it's always been a passion. I was under contract to Verve Records at 18, and made my first album in the early 70s, and then decided to go on this road because Neil Diamond said, if you want to be taken seriously, go on the road. So I just turned the movies down and off I went. But anyway, back to the Manson killing. So we just lived in that house. I mean, a whole bunch of us, you know, and certainly my band and everyone is where we did all the rehearsing and everything like that. And then one day we got a call saying, I got a call one Saturday morning saying, is it true that, you know, everybody's been killed and hung? And I said, of course not. All the news and realized, and that really changed. That changed Hollywood. It changed the media. It changed everything. It changed. It changed. It had such a huge, you know, effect on the world, not just Hollywood, but certainly the media. You know, and the next thing you know, you'd see not just about that murder, but then you'd turn on the TV and the news would be. I never forgot this. Some newscaster was saying, now, if we follow, you see the bloody footprints, and we'll be following, it wasn't about the Manson killings now, it was about something else, you know. And that just changed all of me. It's all when you turn on the news now, you get every atrocity that ever happened, and then, you know, of the day.
What a change it's been now, yeah.
And that's what it is. But, getting back to Bread, living next door, my older daughter, Claire, I don't know exactly how old she was, but she was maybe 7 or 8 or something like that. And these guys moved next door to my house that I just bought and was living up in the hills and everything like that. I'm very happy. And but because we were all still stunned about the Manson murders, this is probably a year later or something, or 6 months or 9 months later, I was just sure they must be a part of you know, the leftover Manson gang or something like that. I mean, it was... So every time they would come out of the house or something, I'd say, Claire, come and get in the house, you know. When we'd get in the house and we'd hide and we'd look out the window and stuff like that. And when cars would go by, I'd say, down, Claire, down, you know, because we had just a picket fence. And, you know, and we had fun doing that, but also we were, you know, I really didn't want anyone to see her or, you know,
right.
Me either. For that matter.
You were very protective of her.
Well, sure, but I mean, you know, and it was just that we were just, I was still in that, you know, mind frame. And you didn't know who was left of the gang that hadn't actually gone to prison or something like that, you know. So anyway, long story short, one day we were out in the front and this guy starts walking toward us. I know this is in the book, but, you know, and and we didn't have time to get into the house. And the guy goes, hi. Hello, you know. He said, I'm with a group called Bread, and we just moved in next door. And it was, the humor of it is that Bread, you know, did all those beautiful, romantic love songs, you know. And I have them already being killers. But they weren't. They were really nice.
That's great. You've known a lot of people in your life, including Jack Nicholson. Do you still keep in touch with Jack?
I do, yeah. And we were in acting class. Right out of high school, I went to this class that Jeff Corey was the teacher, and the rumor was he taught Jimmy Dean, so of course we were all so excited. And Jack was in the class, yeah. And James Coburn, and Dick Chamberlain, and Roger Corman, you know, discovered so many directors. Cinematographers and Robert Towne, who wrote Chinatown, Carol Eastman, who wrote Five Easy Pieces, and
right, lots of things.
It was an incredible class because everybody was so passionate, you know, about the work, and Jack and I became very close friends at that time, you know, hanging out. He always had that special magic, and everything, you know, revolved around Jack, and you know, we hung out at Jack's house.
He just looks like he's always had fun, Jack, no matter what he does.
He has always had fun. Yes, he has. He's just
I'll never forget the bucket
wild
list.
Wild guy.
Yeah.
What, you ever got what?
The bucket list, that movie he did with Morgan Freeman. For some reason, that's one of the movies that sticks in my mind as being one of my favorites.
Really?
I mean, I love that movie. And that's the one that Morgan Freeman said he wouldn't do without Jack Nicholson. And there they did. They did it together, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
There's so many movies that you can connect with.
Oh, he made so many great movies. Are you kidding? You must be younger. You must be a young guy.
Yeah.
Because he made so many great movies. And I can't think of one name. I guess I'm not one of the young guys.
Shining and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And I think he was in Little Shop of Horrors in the 60s, wasn't he?
And what was the Mike Nichols one with Candy Bergen?
Oh, well, yeah. What was that? Not Starting Over. It was Carnal something? No.
Carnal Knowledge.
Was that the one? I don't know.
So, and then the one that he made was, I don't know. So many great ones. I can't think of one. And then the one, I just watched the one with Diane Keaton the other night.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Something's Got to Give, I think it's called.
Yeah. And he's just really so superior as an actor. He really is.
What's fun he must be. Again. He must be fun to work with. Did you ever make a movie with him?
No. And I really pissed off about that.
Oh, really?
No, but we're still, we're still here, so you never know.
And you're still making movies. You're making one with, I see, Paul Sorvino and Norman Lloyd, who I can't believe is still around.
I know, and I was married to him. I mean, not in real life, in the movie.
I was going to say, in real life?
I couldn't believe it, I hadn't seen him in years. He produced an Alfred Hitchcock that I...
Yeah, I thought, I was going to say, I think he had some...
I thought he was always a producer, but then someone told me, they reminded me that he was on
Saint Elsewhere.
A television series. Saint Elsewhere for a long time. And he's a lovely guy, really nice. And I liked working with Paul Sorvino. And yes, I'm still got my hand in. I've been mostly out singing.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular 6 months of my life, I've done a Workaholics. I'm on this Mark Maron show. That comic that I hadn't heard of, but it's very funny and has a huge blog. And,
mm-hmm. It's becoming really big.
Yeah, really nice.
The name is...
Workaholics.
Yeah. So,
what the name? What?
Now, you've done a lot of voiceovers, too?
Nope. Yeah, but what did you say about Mark Maron?
I said he's becoming a big name. I mean, you're hearing more and more about him. In the last week, I've heard about him a couple times.
Well, I have, too, and I didn't know who he was when I played his mother on the pilot, And so I don't know whether it's going or not, but it's funny at this time of my life. So Workaholics, I didn't know what it was. It's these three young crazy guys, and my children, I have twins that are going to be 24, June 24th.
Mm-hmm.
While it's showing on the air, my son is going, Mom, all my friends are texting me. They say you're really funny and everything, and I'd never heard of the show, and I just, did it. Played some sort of, as somebody said, yikes, I hate this word, a cougar, the oldest living cougar. But, anyway, it turned out to be number four in the ratings, in the Nielsen ratings and the other ratings, and so that was really fun. I got a lot of attention from doing something I'd never heard of. So I'm doing all these young people shows suddenly. I don't know what else. Something else.
It's wonderful. It's great to see you still working. And you really have a good guy now. Jonathan seems like a real keeper.
John, my husband?
Yes.
35 years? I have to keep him now. You know what I'm saying?
But he seems like a really good guy, though. He just seems like a real stable, nice guy that you really needed in that time of your life.
Oh, he is a great guy. And he's 15 years younger than me, and I said to him at the time, if he was one day older, he'd be too old for me.
Yeah.
Because he was always, he'd come from, he was an international tax planning lawyer from Yale. He'd gone to St. John's and read all the classic books and the languages written and gotten grants. And, he was already, and then he was so gorgeous that, I didn't really care about any of that because I always liked directors and writers, but,
Now, he had something to do with John Travolta's career?
Well, yes, he did, yeah.
In a big way.
He had a company with Blake Edwards and Julie Andrews. That was the first thing he did. He said to me, I like your friends better. I'm going to get in show business and get you some jobs you deserve. And within an hour or something, he started a company with Blake Edwards and managed he and Julie Andrews. And then he said, I want a management company. He ended up with like 500 everybody you see in movies and television, you know, he's managed at one point or other. And then he had his own studio, and I go, what, you can own the lot? And then he had a company, and he, you know, he started a lot of young directors.
Mm-hmm.
And when I made Back to School, Keith Gordon, Jonathan said passion first, and he'd be interested in anybody with passion. And Keith Gordon, who was the son in Back to School, had a book called Chocolate Wars that he was passionate about, and so Jonathan, you know, got him started. Steve Summers, who did The Mummy, he did his first film around USC and stuff like that. And then he said, I need a star. Mary Lou Henner introduced him to John Travolta, and this is all in the book, but they had 15 years together of Jonathan managing and then executive producing and producing his films, and they had about $800 million films, and, you know, from Michael to Face Off to Phenomenon to General's Daughter to a whole lot of wonderful things, wonderful movies.
Right.
And they worked like slaves. They worked hard. They, you know.
Right.
You see that success is harder to sustain than it is to struggling. I mean, success is harder than struggling.
Right.
It's amazing. It was amazing. Now, he's an amazing guy, my husband.
And you know Burt Bacharach, too, and I'm going to try to get in there.
David, I'm going to interrupt here. I'm going to make this the last question. Is that all right?
Okay, sure.
Okay, yeah.
I do know Burt Bacharach. I love Burt Bacharach. And what were you going to ask me about him?
No, I was going to say, I'm trying to get an interview with him, too, because I love his music, and he has a new book out, I see.
Oh, he's great, and he has a new book. And, you know, I did Lost Horizon with him, and Hal David has been my biggest supporter until he died. And yeah, just... He's a lovely man, Burt Bacharach.
Okay, well, we have to let you go, Sally. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And the book, again, is called Sally Kellerman, Read My Lips. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown,